play. Another foul on Ward. His third for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Pick and roll. And a foul. Offensive foul coming up. Dead battle box. Get it right there.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn of The Athletic here in Des Moines, Iowa, with Dylan Burkhardt of umhoops.com. Dylan, what do you think of Des Moines?
It's a nice place. Weather's not terrible. Came out, there was a good crowd at the games yesterday, I would say.
Sunny but windy. Out here on the plains.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
There are worse places to be.
Wichita.
Oh, jeez. We are not in Wichita, and for that we are thankful. And kind of an eventful day of basketball. I don't know if how did you rate the first day of the tournament yesterday?
Game-wise?
Yeah.
6?
Yeah, not great.
Out of 10, maybe? And that's only because it was the NCAA tournament, and it was the first day, and there was some buzz.
But there was no... Yeah. Did the net ruin the NCAA tournament?
Probably.
Too accurately seeded?
Yeah. Right. There was only one lower seed favored? Do you see that?
I believe so. Which should be,
the case, but that's usually not.
It's usually not, because the seeding process was using RPI as its kind of foundation.
Right.
Now we're seeding the teams based on how good they probably actually are, which maybe makes for a more boring NCAA tournament.
Right.
We'll have to see. It could be a more eventful day today, but I don't really know.
Because I wasn't out on the court for the Nevada-Florida game. Were you out there?
Yeah.
Was it good in there? Was it cooking back and forth?
Yeah. It was more like a traditional NCAA tournament game where you have the one group, like the two groups of fans, right?
Right.
Kind of diagonal across. And we're very on brand right now with the sirens outside.
More sirens. Des Moines shook it 9:30 a.m. on a Friday. My goodness. And the Minnesota-Florida game. Minnesota had a decent crowd there. And it was some back-and-forth action, but it was also a very poorly played game in some ways. But obviously no one listening to this podcast cares about any of that. We're going to start today with Michigan State. Not a great showing yesterday. We know all the stuff about the Tom Izzo storyline that's swirling around all of this. We will touch on that in a little bit, but we're actually going to talk hoops here first. They played poorly. I thought they were really tight. Some guys said, Tom said they weren't. He's like, yeah, they weren't nervous. They were just fatigued. I'm like, that team, I mean, they were playing not to lose, I thought. Everyone except Cassius Winston. I thought Winston was the loosest guy, and thank God for them, because he scored 26, and that was ultimately the difference, that and McQuaid's dagger with 3:10 left. So do you think – I want to start with the starters playing 97 of 100 minutes in the second half. And there's – like I – if this is what they're going to do in tournament games, where if guys aren't making shots and you're not playing anyone else, is that cause for worry for you?
I don't think so. I think it's underrated how much longer a NCAA tournament game takes. Mm-hmm. The media timeouts are longer. The halftime is longer.
It's true. 20-minute halftime?
It feels like a grind. It takes a long time when you're used to sitting through a normal basketball game. And I think that a lot of coaches go with the shorter bench in the NCAA tournament. And Michigan State, they have all the reason to, considering the guys they played in the first half didn't really do anything productive when they were on the court. So I don't look at it as a big concern. I mean, Cassius Winston should play 40 minutes in every NCAA tournament game. It's just kind of a fact. Matt McQuaid's going to be the same deal. I mean, I guess maybe you worry about them running out of gas, but I don't see that affecting them tomorrow against the Minnesota team that plays basically five guys the whole game. I don't think they've got a bench point in like three games.
Right. Well, what did you think of Michigan State showing yesterday against Bradley?
I think it was kind of a classic NCAA tournament scare game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bradley comes out, nothing to lose, playing hot. They just won their Missouri Valley tournament, just feeling themselves, and they hit a bunch of early threes, a few crazy shots, and all of a sudden, those demons creep up into Michigan State's head, right? Are we really doing this again?
Is this, like, oh my God,
six
is this
and nine
happening?
On threes.
Totally.
And they, like, you know all the narratives, and everyone on the court knew all the narratives too.
Yeah.
And I think that starts to play with you a little bit, but Michigan State's also just a lot better than Bradley was. Bradley was not a good team.
No. They had a good plan.
They had a good plan, but if Kenny hits 3 of 7 threes, that game might be a blowout by halftime.
Right.
So that is really kind of where it stands out to me. Like, they still score 1.13 points per possession, and Bradley just ran out of gas and could not score against.
All right, sorry about that. A little technical glitch. Dylan, continue your point.
We blame the Brendan Quinn audio production staff here for this one. So what we see every time with Michigan State down the stretch is that eventually their defense finds a way to just grind out the game down the stretch, right? It's the same narrative in almost every Michigan State win. And it's a pretty good luxury to fall back on.
So, Kenny Gomes. We were talking about this at the bar last night, weren't we?
We were.
Yeah. I have concerns here that he was shooting so far ahead of all logic and reason. The numbers, to believe that he was going to be able to continue at a 45% clip would have been pretty foolhardy. And I now, he goes 1 for 10 from the field yesterday, 0 for 7 on threes.
0 for 4 on threes against Michigan, too.
0 for 4 on threes against Michigan, too. And if I'm Michigan State, I get a little bit worried that he's going back to that. You know, the numbers are, they're always going to eat, to average out, you know, right? 99% of the time. And if this is going to be the down tick that kind of gets him back to the mean or whatever, you're the numbers guy. Is that the right word?
Regression toward the mean.
There you go. Thank you. I do the words, man. You know, that is, it's a, the offense looks a lot different without an extra option on the perimeter and without his, the shots that he takes off of those ball screens and how teams have to defend them. Like, they need another weapon, right? He needs to score because they just don't have option. They play five guys.
So here are the two
and
things.
One of them is Aaron Henry, who is limited offensively.
So,
well, six guys, six, five and a half, because we'll count Ward.
What extent are you saying that he's lost his shot? Like, is he just going to go 0 for the NCAA tournament? If he just starts making a couple, you're fine.
Yeah, I like, and if he makes the first two in the next game, then I'm like, okay, you know. But if it's in his head and he starts aiming shots, this is what happens.
So,
like, Kenny was, he will end his career. He's a 35% shooter for his career, and
50
that's,
of his 54 threes
that,
of this year.
That number's completely boosted by the last 5 weeks. Like, what is real when it comes to his shooting is a hard, right, it's a hard thing to put your finger on.
Pretend you're an opposing coach and you're game planning Michigan State right now.
I'm defending Kenny's threes. Yes.
Yeah, and you're still defending those shots because you see that. 3 games ago, he was on a streak where he had at least 6 straight games?
100%.
So, it's not changing their offense yet. It's just changing the result of their offense.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's, like, a key point. Like, John Teske's still shooting threes, even though you don't really know if it's going to die on the back of the rim or go right in.
I'm saying when they've played their best ball, though, down the stretch, pretty much other than the Michigan win when he wasn't a factor offensively, it's a lot of it's been because of how great he's been.
You're going to need him to hit some of those shots.
Right. And he was an all-league caliber player over the second half of the conference schedule.
And I think he still gives you a lot, even if he's not making the
Oh, shots. Totally. I mean, I'm not saying you sit him. I'm just saying that, like, man, this is something that, you know, if the bad day comes and the loss comes earlier, then, right, like, the goal, I think the goal for Michigan State is to get to Duke and see what happens, right? That's the goal. Mm-hmm. I'm saying if that doesn't happen, like, I could see this being something that we're talking about the next day.
Yeah, that's if anyone has a bad shooting day, though, so
I'm trying to pull takes out of a Bradley game.
My
Dylan,
take is that
come, you know, we were fighting at the end of the last.
The fact
pod.
That he still got up seven threes speaks to that they have confidence in him continuing to shoot that shot, which is important to the offense kind of remaining
right,
the same.
Right now, is it confidence in him taking that shot, or is it because someone has to shoot?
Probably a little bit of both.
Okay,
but that's how confidence starts.
So Bradley's defensively, though, I mentioned that they had a good plan. You know, they were sagging off of him, and Michigan State was never comfortable. Xavier Tillman was, like, very open and honest about that. He's just like, we just never got comfortable against what they were doing defensively. And as the more uncomfortable we got, the tighter we got, and then the tighter we got, the more we started thinking, and we were in our heads, and blah, 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 and that's just what you saw. But, damn, man, it is a convenience to have Cassius Winston sometime because
he's
unbelievable.
In the country.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. And 25 of 26 free throws.
Yeah, it helps to hit. I mean, there's been games where that did not happen.
Yeah.
It's a good time to make. I mean, that was really the difference if mm-hmm. you look at the box score. Even Bradley was 12 of 18 at the line.
Right. So my thought in total on Michigan State is it was good to just get through one game out here and kind of get the NCAA – just get back and get a game in. I don't think they'll play this poorly again. You know, they weren't turning the ball over. They weren't – you know, they made their free throws. They just weren't executing offensively, and I think that's something that is not a running issue, right? I think that was a one-day thing, and – now comes a perfect remedy, and that might be Minnesota's defense.
If you look at the box score, the only thing that's off is just 5 of 19.
5 of 19 threes. Yeah.
And if Kenny makes three of those shots, all of a sudden Winston has 7 assists mm-hmm. to 1 turnover. You're talking about the star of the NCAA. I mean, that's really the thing. There was, I think, really the reason it stood out was that Bradley's offense kind of hung in there more than you would expect them to,
mm-hmm.
right?
And you probably would have wanted Matt McQuaid to take more than 4 threes in that game, but they had a good plan. They had a good plan on him. They were really – he couldn't get open a lot of times.
And that's – I think that's where you have to start mm-hmm. defending Michigan State. You can't let that happen. And, well, I think you start with taking away Tillman, rolling to the basket, and then you try to take away McQuaid, and then you hope Winston misses shots.
Right.
And
– we've talked about this before, the theory of make Winston score 40, right?
Yeah, and he – scored 26. So.
I'm not saying he can't do it. I'm saying what's a good plan against Michigan State. So
you know who I don't trust to come up with a good plan to stop Michigan State?
I have an idea. I have an idea of who you're going to say. Who's that?
That would be Richard Pitino.
Okay.
But I did not trust Richard Pitino to come up with a good plan to beat Louisville, and he decided, oh, we're going to shoot threes now, and they're going to go in.
He decided
he's an evil genius. Haven't shot threes all year and just
he decided that.
Them
in. Man, what a decision to make. Shrewd call. Yeah, putting up 86 on Louisville, which is that the most they've given up all year? It's the most they've given up since. How did they give up 89 to Pittsburgh? Jesus. Anyway. So this game, they played once early this year. I only caught the second half of that game because I was at Michigan earlier in the day. But by the time I got there, it was already over. Michigan State jumped all over the Gophers in that game. That was when the 79 team was back and stuff. Hold on. That's when the 79 team was back, and they just ran over them. It was 79-50-something. What do you think about this matchup? Is it only dependent on if Minnesota can shoot threes like that again?
Well, what's weird about the first game is that Minnesota attempted 27 threes. Mm-hmm. That's the second most they attempted all year.
Against the pack line defense.
Right? Yeah, but they're 345th in three-point rate. So they never shoot threes.
Right.
And they just started bombing them away. Michigan State gives up a lot of threes. I don't know if... I don't really find that to be likely to be a repeatable success.
Right.
Obviously, a familiarity. I don't know if that helps. Who would you say that helps more?
I would say... I mean, in terms of them... I mean, they played in early February. Like, it was a long time ago. I don't know how much it's going to be, like, easy recall of game plan, stuff like that. I think it's more... They're playing a team that's not going to care that they're Michigan State, I think, is more of an issue, right? Because Michigan State and Tom Izzo walks on the floor against a lot of teams, and they get those teams have a little holy shit moment, I think.
But
Minnesota certainly doesn't care, right? It's a conference game.
Amir Coffey, Jordan Murphy, Dupree McBrayer, they've played against Michigan State probably.
Right, and they know it's going to be physical, so they're not going to be intimidated by the style of play or the brand or anything like that. So in that terms, you know, as a 10 seed, I think it's an advantage for Minnesota to play someone that they're not, you know, in wide-eyed about. I think it might be, who are the other twos other than Michigan?
Wofford plays Kentucky.
Right, like if Minnesota was playing Kentucky, I think it would be a little bit different, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think they'd rather play Michigan State than Kentucky.
Totally.
I don't know who the other one is. Probably must play today. But I don't know.
People are probably screaming into their car radios, though, with the answer.
Well, at least you guys are smarter than we are.
So Tennessee.
But we want to know who the 7-10 is.
Oh, and that one is Cincinnati, Iowa.
I'd rather play those teams. So I look at it like Minnesota... I think you have to adjust for how good Michigan State is at home. So most teams, Michigan State is kind of just blown out of the gym when they're at home. So you can't look too much into that score in East Lansing. What was it? 79-55. I mean, that's it's a beatdown.
I think the more relevant result, really, is 75-73 against Purdue in the Big Ten tournament on a neutral court. In terms of what this Minnesota team is, I don't look at the game at Michigan State. I look at them beating Purdue.
Yeah. I mean, and they beat Purdue twice in the last month of the year. I just have a hard time getting... I think it's hard because when I've seen Michigan play Minnesota, they have just basically crushed their soul. And starting with just taking Amir Coffey out of the game, it's just been tough to watch. Mm-hmm. So I just have a hard time buying into Minnesota, but they have looked good against other kinds of teams. Even that win over Penn State was a good win. And the Louisville, I didn't see that coming at all. So,
So Amir Coffey's running a lot more point guard than people might, you know, people will only watch Minnesota on a glance. Amir Coffey's been running a decent amount of point. I always botch his name. Gabe Kalscher. Gives him a little bit of a different dynamic as a three-point shooter. And, you know, Jordan Murphy's Jordan Murphy. He tweaked his back with a bad fall in that game. How that lingers, I don't know. We'll probably find out a little bit later today at media availability. But another team that, you know, it's going to be starters or starters in this one completely. It'll basically be 5-on-5.
Yeah, Minnesota is without Eric Curry, who got hurt late in the season. And they're potentially without Matt Stockman, who's their next backup big man who had a concussion. I guess he could potentially be back. They do not have a lot of depth. The bench, I don't think, scored yesterday. And they scored 86 points.
Correct.
And I don't think the bench scored really much in the Big Ten tournament either. But they have a big front line that's not going to be intimidated by Michigan State. I think the key to stopping Minnesota is taking away Kalisher's shooting and taking away their transition, and then they just kind of can't get going offensively.
Right.
The front court matchups are interesting to me.
100%.
I think that Michigan State's front court is kind of thin. Even, like, Kenny Gones gave up a lot of buckets to the who was it, Childs, I think, mm-hmm. Bradley, the 6'7 mm-hmm. kid who just kind of posted him up. He's a good defender. He's playing a lot of minutes. Could be an interesting spot for Murphy, and Michigan State has also struggled on the defensive glass at times this year.
Yes.
So maybe that's an area where if Minnesota can get it into the kind of game they want, they could make an impact.
Yeah, the Tillman Gones versus Murphy Oturu, I think this is where it starts here. Because, you know, Tillman finished 5-for-8. Kenny went 1-for-10 in that game. They did combine for 20 boards, but they were playing a Valley team. It's not going to be that easy in this one. And if it turns into Minnesota getting a lot of extra possessions and Michigan State having to play a lot of defense, right, I would worry if Tom Izzo was going to talk about them being fatigued against Bradley and they give up offensive boards and find themselves playing long defensive possessions, right, and grinding, that's a bad recipe. And if Minnesota hits a couple threes and gets some confidence, right, if they're shooting a lot of threes and getting boards, I think that is, in terms of a recipe for a bad team to beat a good team, like that's one of the plausible theories I could come up with, right?
Nick Ward breakout game?
I don't know about a Nick Ward breakout game.
At 22 points on 9-14 shooting in the first game. No. I think we've talked so much about games where Nick Ward's unplayable.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game where I think Nick Ward could be a key.
That's okay. I'll buy that take.
And I don't know where he is at as a player and mentally, but right. This is a spot where all of a sudden you need him. And this is where having Nick Ward makes a difference. You're not putting in Thomas Kithier in totally. There to try to bang around. You have an actual guy who's played well against Minnesota before, knows the drill.
Mm-hmm.
I think that changes the dynamic.
Right. And he can actually move Jordan Murphy, right?
He can move Jordan Murphy. Right. He can score over and through Jordan Murphy, and right. He's done it.
Right. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Minnesota's not going to put you in ball screens all the time.
It would be a really interesting development if that is what happens with Nick, because he played 3 minutes in the second half yesterday, and I don't know if the broadcast cameras picked up on him, but it was, we'll call it freshman year body language on the bench. He was despondent. He looked disconnected. He wasn't standing in huddles. He looked pissed, and he looked somewhere between pissed and disinterested, right? And look, everyone knows the long-running deal with Ward and playing time and blah, blah, blah. But if he gets out there, he will be going balls to the wall. I can tell you that much for sure.
And I think what's good about this matchup
mm-hmm.
is that his balls to the wall works against Minnesota and not necessarily against some other teams.
Sure.
Like, he can try as hard as he wants to guard a ball screen. I don't think he's going to be great at it against a good ball screen team. This is just wrestling in the paint, getting after it, like, mm-hmm. back to his kind of bread and butter.
Right. Okay.
You heard it here first. Nick Ward breakout game.
I think that's a pretty strong prediction. I could definitely see that. And then everyone can write about it. So, Izzo. The Izzo thing. I did not write about it. I've been covering Michigan State for 3 years. And I don't know. I mean, is it right to almost shrug at it? I don't know if that's right at this point. But I'm going to tell you from my perspective how I view it. So, we're watching the game. And so the clips start popping up on Twitter, right, of Izzo yelling at Aaron Henry. And me and one of the beat writers next to each other basically were like looking at each other. We're like, this is going to be a thing, right? And to us, people who are around the program who watch every single game, so it includes Michigan State fans, anyone who's connected to the program, like me and the reporter next to her, we're looking at each other like, this is a Tuesday night at Breslin, right? This is not... You see this, right? This is how the man coaches. The problem is that it was the first game of the NCAA tournament on CBS, and we live in a news cycle that there are literally people sitting on at news desks. I put news desks in quotes, looking for a video like that to put a headline like "epic meltdown," lunges at player, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that, you know, I don't know. I think it's a little bit overblown. Now, all that said, I don't think I could play for Tom Izzo. And I think a lot of people would say they probably couldn't play for Tom Izzo. And I don't know if I'd want to. I don't know. You know, like, I don't agree with that style. Like, that's not my style of coaching. But that's his style. And, like, this is what it is. This is what the guy is. So if you're mad about what happened yesterday, like, yesterday was not an incident. If you want to have a bigger conversation about, like, that style of coaching, that's fine. But, like, yesterday, like, that's bullshit. Yesterday as this, like, Tom Izzo crossed the line. Tom Izzo didn't cross any line. Like, it was the same thing that he's – that's always right there in plain sight.
If he crossed the line, then the line moved. So what I think stands out is that in the NCAA tournament, there's just a magnifying glass on everything. Mm-hmm. There's more interest in the sport of college basketball for 48 hours than there is the rest of the year, right? And yes, it's going to go viral, and if the camera's looking the other way, then maybe it goes the other thing. But more and more, we see that, like, you look at Pat Chambers. If the camera wasn't on the huddle, that's never a thing. Yeah. So there is coaching like that. I guess my beef is with the idea of how he justified it, in the sense that that's, like, the only way you can be held accountable for something. Yes. And there's all sorts of other programs that work differently and still have plenty of accountability. And I feel like that is just kind of a dated take, so to speak.
Yeah, but, like, for him, like, that's not a take.
This is how he enforces accountability. This is how he's wired,
you know?
And I agree with what I think you said, that it's what you sign up for. I mean, it's not a secret. Mm-hmm. It's not like you are going to go to a Michigan State game and be recruited there and be like, oh, well, looks like a real cozy situation on the sidelines over here. You know what you're getting into.
And the players tell incoming recruits, this is what it is. Like, if you can't handle this, do not come here. So here's an example. Yesterday, so I write this Aaron Henry piece, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone, please go read my Aaron Henry piece.
Should have dropped that.
Probably should have mentioned that earlier. But so I've been in communication with the Henry family a lot over the past week for a story about Aaron and his uncle and their relationship. I won't get into the whole thing. Just go read it if you can. But point being, I've been, you know, a lot of phone calls with his brother and his father and his uncle. So, you know, the story runs yesterday. So there's a couple text messages exchanged. Hey, you know, I send the story. Hey, here's the story. It's up. They get back. Hey, I like it. Okay, whatever. But, you know. But later in the day, right? So the game ends and a text pops up from a family member. And I say, oh, no, shit. You know? I look at it and it's about the game. Like, this is after the game. It's like, man, that was a close one. But moving on, you know, like something like that. Where, okay, like, if it's a thing, I honestly don't think the Henry family was sitting there freaking out. Right. They weren't at the game. They were in Indianapolis, for what it's worth. But, I don't think there was any outrage on the part of the family or of Aaron in person if you saw him in the locker room. Like, everyone knows.
So here's my
you get
question.
Yelled at. Okay.
Do you think he pushes the Aaron Henry too hard? It seems like when Aaron Henry has gone into these huge issues with his confidence, he did it in the game, basically, after that. He missed the dunk. He had some other just plays where he looked unsure of himself. Do you think, I mean, maybe there's something better on the other end of that, and he did hit some big shots on the end, but it makes you wonder if that has anything to do with some of the kind of mental ups and downs that he's gone through with his confidence.
I have when he went up for that dunk and he brought the ball back behind his head, it looked, I think in his mental picture, right, in his mind's eye, he was dunking Tom Izzo's head into that basket. And that's fine. And I think that's what, like, Tom wants that.
Yeah.
So, like, if if you're going to question the manner in which he coaches and being, you know, bullying, for lack of a better term, whatever, like, yeah, that's like, that's his motivation. But I do think at sometimes it can send a kid sideways for 5 minutes in a game. Right. And then they build him back up, and he makes a couple buckets at the end and plays great defense and all of that stuff. But, like, I can tell you right now, when Aaron Henry is an All-American as a junior, everyone's going to be talking about, man, remember when he was getting, you know, run out of the gym by Tom Izzo as a freshman? Like, I can write that story right now, man.
Oh, boy.
So, that's my take on it. Do you have anything else to add on this?
No, I think that... I just think it's interesting how we get to this point where we have these viral moments, and an NCAA tournament, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah. And you have a bunch of people who don't pay attention, who just have immediate takes, and...
And then you have the news cycle.
They talk about it with expertise, you know, as if they know what the hell they're talking about, and it's where it is. I'm sure some people will have some reactions to maybe this part of the podcast, but whatever. Okay. Michigan. Do you have anything to say about the Montana game other than as expected?
It was boring. I would say the best takeaway from a Michigan point of view would be that Charles Mathis played really, really well and looked about as healthy as he has looked, made some shots, got some confidence back. I think that would be a takeaway. And it's also just Montana had no one over 6'6", and no one that can jump like him, so it kind of just wasn't fair. What do you even say about that game?
Nothing.
But
Montana was not good.
You can't take those kind of games for granted either, because you see crazy things happen in the NCAA tournament all the time. Take an easy win.
Yeah, I thought it was good for Michigan to have a good start to the game. It was like 10-2 or something like that early on. You know, they avoided last year's situation. So I do think they came out ready. I was a little bit perplexed a few times by some out of character stuff from Xavier Simpson, a couple turnovers that you're just like, that's kind of, that just seemed unnecessary.
And he fixed those in the second half.
Yeah.
His credit.
Yeah. But yeah, those guys getting to see shots fall. I thought it was interesting that Poole only took 4 shots in 25 minutes.
Hit a big shot, though. Hit the biggest shot of the game when they cut it to 8.
That corner 3.
Yeah. I thought he played within himself, but some of it, I think, was how Montana was guarding, and they really dialed up Charles and some ball screen stuff to get him downhill. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, Poole 4 shots. Tough to say where he is at in all this, but... I think you'd rather take a 2-of-4 game than a 4-of-10 game.
I agree. The my biggest thing would be it was probably really good for John Teske to see a shot fall in the, you know, in this arena, in the NCAA tournament. And same thing goes for Charles Mathews. Charles Mathews looked like 2018 March or March 2018.
Looked like he looked against Montana last year.
Right.
That was what really got him started in that run.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also being guarded by a 6'2" guy, so you have to take it with a grain of salt.
But, you know, we got to the line, they converted, scored 74 points, only making 5 threes. So I think overall, a good one to get out of the way for Michigan. But the much larger conversation is Florida and trying to move on. I think this game's going to be a meat grinder.
Can we point out that I predicted on this podcast that Florida was going to be Nevada?
Yeah, you also said Montana was going to be better than last year's version of Montana.
Said they were... Okay. We'll let that slide. Can't get them all right.
You did. I thought Nevada was for sure going to win, but... man, what a... That season fell off a cliff. Jesus Christ, Nevada was ranked in the top 10 like a month ago, and... Loses as a 7 seed in the first round to a bad Florida team.
I don't think they beat a team in the NCAA tournament all year.
Oh. Wow.
It's hard to get to 29 wins without one over NCAA tournament team. That's a true accomplishment in scheduling.
So Florida, I've saw them once in person way back in December when Michigan State went down there, and they were a offensively deficient team then. It seems like they've improved it. They improved it enough to get into the NCAA tournament. I know you're a big Mike White guy.
I think he's a good coach. This season is really fascinating because it's all like they were a preseason top 15 team.
Mm-hmm.
Most people thought they could compete in the SEC. They had an all SEC player back in Jalen Hudson, and he just kind of completely lost his way. He got taken out of the starting lineup. He was in the doghouse all year. Finally has kind of turned his game around in the last month of the year. Mm-hmm. Started making threes. He's at 28% for the year. Shot 40% last year, but he's up in the 30s again over the last 10 games. They really just lost every close game in the non-conference, and then were, 4-6 in the SEC.
Yeah.
Figured out how to dig out of it, get to the NCAA tournament, but they're actually playing pretty good basketball down the stretch here. It is definitely a defense-dependent team.
Very much so.
They shoot a lot of threes, but are a bad three-point shooting team, mm-hmm. which is not really the recipe for great offense, but it's also the recipe for a lot of variability, right?
Yeah.
You get a chance to... You shoot enough threes, they couldn't go in sometimes. And it wasn't really their three-point shooting that won them that game against Nevada. They were just 5 of 18, but they just really were the tougher team, I thought, than right. Nevada, and their defense was just... It's a very good defensive team, a lot of length. In a lot of ways, they match up really naturally with Michigan. They play
totally
basically four guards and a role finisher in the at the center position. They have a big 230-pound 6'6 freshman who will match up with Iggy Brazdeikis. I mean, so both of these teams are kind of built to point out or to attack mismatches mm-hmm. by playing differently than other teams. I don't know if either would really want to draw a team that plays kind of just like them in a lot of ways.
Right.
So, where do you come...
I think in the 24 hours of real time that Michigan will get to watch film, address things, right, meetings, blah, 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 one of the biggest talking points will be that 1-2-2 stuff that Florida does that slows you down because, you know, John Beilein has talked about a million times. They don't like pressure, not in that it creates turnovers or stuff, but that it ends up slowing the offense to the point where you're not even getting into your action until there's 18 seconds left on a shot clock. And mm-hmm. you're limited in time that you can run your stuff, wait for the mistake, and then you get a bucket,
yep.
right? So, you know, do you... The problem with that 1-2-2 that Florida runs, from what I remember, is like, it's not one that you can really attack and score on, right? It's going to slow you down. Like, all you can do is break it, right? So, you know, Michigan's going to have to find, in a game that's going to be 58-54 or 61-57, something like that, Michigan's going to have to find a way to get those five scores, right, that change the game. And do they come on, you know, a couple tip-outs from John Teske that turn into an extra three, right? Or a couple times you can find a way to burn them in transition off of a miss or something like that, right? That's the key. Can you get the five scores that change the game?
Yep. So talking about that press... They are ranked 346th in average defensive possession length.
Mm-hmm.
So they force basically the longest possessions, basically because they bleed 8 seconds off of every
right.
possession. And that's tough for Michigan. Going back to Teske tip-outs, they're 313th in defensive rebounding. There so they're go. Not they're a great defense, but they're not a good defensive rebounding team.
Mm-hmm.
That could be somewhere where Michigan tries to attack, but it's also not somewhere where Michigan ever attacks. So that's mm-hmm. tough, right? Like, you're trying to be something you're not. Nevada killed them on the offensive glass. It still wasn't enough to win, but...
So Michigan, you think they'd probably send a second guy
I would think about sending Matthews or Brazdeikis and
totally.
Trying to create a few extra scores because right. you're going to need to figure out a way to create a few extra scores.
Right.
Florida can switch mm-hmm. 1 through 5. They even get switched just going into their base defense based on their pressure because they go from a 1-2-2 press to man-to-man quite often, and that'll leave mismatches. I don't think they'll worry about Andrew Nembhard getting put on John Teske mm-hmm. or whatever just because Michigan is not really going to attack that right away. Anyhow, they do like to hedge ball screens, but they can switch them. That always is what kind of it comes down to for if Michigan can figure out a good defense. And that's, I think it comes down to a game where Michigan needs someone to make one-on-one plays and score against tough, athletic defenders. And that's been kind of an issue for this team all year.
Right. And, I mean, like, so when we talked about Michigan, when we talked about their tournament preview, right?
Mm-hmm.
How far they go and blah, blah. And I talked about, I see them ultimately exiting this tournament on a game where that there's that 8-minute offensive stretch where just nothing can go, and it's the issues of the season will eventually be the issue of the game, right? And you know, this game certainly has the potential to have that stretch, and it's going to happen, right? Like there will be a 6 to 8 minute stretch where just nothing happens for Michigan offensively, and they're going to have to find a way. Like the defense needs to be locked in and locked down because, you know, an 8-0 run, a 10-0 run, like can really spin this game because it's just going to be so tight and so low scoring. So, you know, we can sit here and talk about the offense all day, but like if Michigan's defense can just hold Florida to 52 or 50 points, right? You can still win.
I would say either team that scores a point per possession will win.
That's
and
fair.
There's a good chance that neither team scores a point per possession.
Right.
Like this is right. gonna. That's the kind of game it is, and I think there's a good chance that both teams trade 6-minute scoreless droughts. Right. Like
sure.
It's you can't. I would say Michigan has a better chance of putting a spurt together at some point, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a higher when their offense works. It actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Florida can really even say that. Turnovers. Xavier Simpson had those 4 turnovers. Florida forces a bunch of turnovers.
Mm.
They have good length at like every spot. And
yeah.
That's something. Michigan is really good at not turning the ball over. I think if you can avoid turnovers, you're in an all right spot. But you look at that, what, like Penn State? Penn State used some of that kind of 3-quarter court pressure and
yes.
gave Michigan issues.
Yes.
Iowa used some. So it has been a thing for Michigan to struggle with.
Good point.
Florida will throw out a zone sometimes. They went 1-through-1 at a couple nice spots in the game against Nevada just to slow them down. So they really are, they're not afraid to change things up and keep you off guard, which is can be tough for a Michigan offense that its whole thing is figuring out what you're doing and how to attack it.
I have a feeling that we're sitting here absolutely scaring the piss out of a lot of Michigan fans listening because it could be really seen as a really bad matchup. Do you see any chance that they just go out and just torch them?
Yeah, I mean, if Michigan hits threes, I don't think Florida can keep up.
Right.
So if Michigan scores, Florida, I had a stat, I think they're like 3-14 when they allow more than a point per possession.
Right.
So, but Michigan probably is something not similar because they haven't lost as many games, but they both need to just hold teams under, 65 points or something like that.
I mean, teams have made threes on Florida.
Yeah.
Texas A&M made 18, North Florida 16, Mercer 12, Tennessee 12, Oklahoma 11, Florida Gulf Coast 11, Ole Miss 11, LSU 11, Butler, Mississippi State, Georgia all hit 10. And they actually won some of those games. They went.
And Florida also seems to have this thing where they just lose their collective minds in the last, 10 minutes of game, and everything comes back to a one-possession game late. They even did it a little bit against Nevada.
Interestingly, they managed to go 8-3 in those games when those teams hit all those threes. How about that? That's interesting. So, yeah, weird game. I don't think it's a – I think Michigan's a better team, but I don't think it's a great matchup.
Are you sure you weren't looking at their threes?
Oh, their made threes. I'm an idiot.
Is that the Quinergy analytics over here?
Quinergy analytics. Oh, rearing buddy. Its ugly head. Okay, here's the real numbers. Can we edit that out? Probably not.
No, we're leaving it in.
Okay. All right, the real numbers.
They've only given up more than 10 threes three times.
I thought that seemed like it didn't make any freaking sense. But how about the fact that they can shoot threes like that?
Well, that's they it. Just shoot a lot of them. So, right. Yeah, if you shoot a lot of them, you're going to make a lot of them.
So the real numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Only 7 times have they given up 9 or more threes. That's an exceedingly low number. And they went 2 and 5 in those games. So, yeah, you're right. I think that might be the magic number is probably 8 threes for Michigan.
But you look, here's the other thing. They shoot so many threes. Michigan's defense is so good at preventing threes. Curious to see if they can still get that kind of volume off or if it is... They don't really have another way to attack that I see, and that's kind of their issue. Right? Like, if they can't generate open threes, they don't really have a go-to option.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good preview for Michigan, Florida, and just ending it with a debacle on my part.
On brand
for the Bears. Okay. Anything else on Michigan before we touch on the Big Ten and then get the hell out of here?
What's your pick?
I'll take.
We didn't do pick. We'll do both games.
We'll do both games. I will take Michigan over Florida, 65-60.
Okay.
I will take Michigan State over Minnesota, 82-70.
Give me Michigan State to cover and win.
Mm-hmm.
Florida to cover, Michigan to win.
What do you think the Florida line's only going to be like?
7.
It's 7? I thought it was going to be like 5 or 4.
Well, I think the KenPom is 7. The Michigan State line's 10.
Okay. We're basically in agreement.
Yeah, I think Florida will be tough. It's really creepy how many parallels there are between Michigan's kind of path to the NCAA tournament this year and last year. A really good defensive team in the second game, mm-hmm. playing Montana first, mm-hmm. West region. It's just a strange draw.
Percentage chance that both teams are not playing next weekend?
35.
Okay.
If you're saying one of the two teams right. loses, that high or low?
Seems a little high. But Big Ten, man alive, right?
Feels like we're in November again.
How about it? Today's matchups is what? Wisconsin, Oregon, Iowa, Cincinnati, Ohio State, Iowa State. What's your record today? The league went 4-0 yesterday, right?
I believe so. 5-0? Yeah.
8 tournament teams.
Yeah, 5-0. Maryland, Minnesota, Michigan, Michigan State, and Purdue.
Pretty good.
I would go with... I like Wisconsin over Oregon, despite all of the Oregon love.
Mm-hmm.
I like Cincinnati over Iowa, and Iowa State over Ohio State. So 1-2.
Okay. I think there's a chance of an 0-3 day, but I was just proved wrong yesterday, so it's probably going to be a 3-0 day.
And what about, so we talked about Michigan, Michigan State, but what about Purdue, Villanova?
I like Purdue in this game, actually. I do.
Finally coming around on the Boilermakers.
Yeah. Which is probably bad news for the Boilermakers. I'll take Purdue over Nova. I'll take LSU over Maryland, and
poor Minnesota just gets knocked out by the league eats its own.
Right.
That's right. That's a tough draw for the those Big Ten NCAA tournament checks.
Right.
Because you're guaranteed a 1.6, but you're not a guarantee. You can't get two.
Much bigger question. Nebraska TCU on Sunday in the NIT. Can the Huskers live to see another? I am fascinated by this. Tim Miles continues to work while basically people are making it sound like they're signing contracts on the in the other office.
It's not great.
It's crazy.
Gotta sell some NIT tickets, man.
I'm hoping Nebraska goes to New York. I think that would just be freaking hilarious.
The whole situation makes me uncomfortable.
Because, well, you know what's going to happen is, like, if Hoiberg is really actually on board with going there and he has two more weeks to think about it or something like that, other jobs open up, other opportunities arise. If Tim Miles can somehow coach his way into not staying, but just into ruining their plan, that would be...
good enough for you.
Oh, man, what a story. All right. I'm here for the palace intrigue, man. okay, do we have anything else?
I think we're good.
That was pretty tight, almost an hour. So we will be back. We're gonna try to find a way Sunday. We're both traveling, so it might be later, and then like a Monday publish or something,
probably. Okay. Or it's Monday morning.
Yeah. But we're on the same flight, so if we're sitting next to each other, we're just gonna queue it up right there.
Everyone else gets the live show. Everyone on the plane.
That's right. Get some Bloody Marys going. And we'll make it happen. All right. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Well, we hope everyone's enjoying the tournament. Make sure you check out UM Hoops for...
everything you need to know about Florida.
Everything.
Check out The Athletic for...
for a big story on Aaron Henry. I have a story coming today. I'm going to write Michigan today, leading into tomorrow's game. And give a look to the story out of yesterday on... Michigan State kind of playing with, they're in the difficult spot of carrying the burden of 3 years of weekend exits, and it's an interesting kind of headspace to operate in. So I wrote about that yesterday. So that's it. Check it out, The Athletic, UM Hoops. Subscribe to the pod, leave a review, and we love you. Be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers.